lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they were run over by a bus driven by a somewhat grouchy Keanu Reeves. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to the show. Of course, this is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting.
Uh-huh.
The idea
What's
is...
What's the show called, Phil?
Well, I think the show is called Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil, for those of you not listening. And this is episode 198, and the idea of this show is that we all share the things that we figured out along the way. We share the tips and the techniques, and so hopefully at the end of each show, we all learn four new things about how to write better songs.
That's an average, though. Not
an average, that's true.
Sometimes we learn 10.
That's going to be minus the things I'm holding to myself.
Okay. And, of course, you can always find us here live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on CJRU 1280 a.m. here in Toronto. Or you can listen to the live stream at songtalk.ca if you can't get to a radio. Tonight, I'll be your host. My name is Phil Emery, and joining me tonight, as always, are the very dedicated members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. Across the way is Mr. Bruce Arrett.
Ready for duty, sir.
To my left is Mr. Neil.
What's happening?
The man on the board. This is the kid. We're calling him the kid now.
Say hi, Anthony.
Hi.
Of course.
Very good.
You should have said hi, Anthony.
Taking care of the social media onslaught is the very talented Vanessa Reland.
Hey,
Vanessa. Please, during the show, join in the conversation with your thoughts and your comments and your questions and tweet them out to Song Talk Radio on Twitter or send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. That is feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share them with the audience in real time, and you can be famous. And you can always stop by the website at songtalk.ca and find out how you can be a guest on our show. And speaking of guests, one of our very favorite guests is Mr. Patrick Ballantyne.
Woo! Back.
He's been on our show many times. He's an award-winning songwriter. I'm not even... Go on the shows. We all know him. He's an amazing
Google his
songwriter.
Name, Patrick Ballantyne. There's a list as long as your finger.
Do you have a wiki page?
He does. Yes.
You have a wiki page?
I do.
He does. With all his co-writes.
I need to update it. Okay. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah. And, of course, the big news, Patrick, is you're just releasing your new album.
New record called Calendar was released late in October. We're going to do a... Toronto CD release on November 23rd, which is this Thursday evening. Say What.
That's at Front and...
At Front and Church Street, more or less. Amber McLean, who's my label mate with Northwood Records. Amber is an absolutely fabulous singer-songwriter. And she has a new CD coming out as well, more or less the same time.
All right.
So we're doing like a joint CD release on Thursday night. So it's all acoustic and intimate and no bands, no nothing, nowhere to hide. So it'll be a nice change of pace.
Yeah, that's it's a pretty solid album too.
Well, thank you very much.
What was it like putting it out together?
Well, it goes back a year or two ago when I decided it'd be a good idea to put a song out every month, release a new song every month.
So this is
a sort of a combination of those songs. You can imagine that when you're working that quickly, putting a song a month out, writing and recording, etc., that there's some mistakes that you make or some things that you would like to clean up. So really what we did was we went back and we cleaned up a few of the tracks. Not a whole lot, but a few of it just to make it a little tidier, make it a little bit more palatable personally to my own ear. And because some of the songs were recorded quite differently, some recorded at home in a home studio, others were recorded in a real studio with a live band, typically the Oches, who I know were on the show not that long ago. Mm. So sonically, we had to sort of adjust things to make it sound a little bit more of a piece. But I think we've done that. It actually works together, I think, pretty well as an album. It's just 12 little songs.
Did you make any songwriting tweaks during this final stage?
No songwriting tweaks. No, they were all just recording production sonic stuff. The songs came out fully formed and brilliant right off.
They required no adjustment.
Patrick wrote his entire wiki page himself, by the way.
Who else is going to do it? Who else is going to nominate for me for a Juno? Just me.
So what was the experience of doing that song a month? thing. That's
It was exhausting. In retrospect, what it did was it kept me focused. I would strongly encourage anybody who's really, you know, just sort of feels like they're dabbling a little bit. It really forces you to focus on writing the song and tweaking and getting it to where you want to get it, because you're going to be releasing it.
Yeah.
And letting people hear it and judge you, so you there's a certain amount of discipline required for that. But I found that the writing and the recording part's easy enough for me.
Yeah,
it's all the other stuff, like the artwork and the business part of it. That was where the challenge was. But anyway, sorry.
I'm just curious, Patrick. If you're going to do a song a month, what's the hardest part? Starting them or finishing them?
Finishing them.
Yeah.
So yeah. I can start 100 songs a day, but yeah. it's finishing them that okay. is tough.
I think I have the opposite problem. I can finish something once I start it, but starting them is,
yeah, I'm the same way. I have hundreds of songs that are in various points of completion, and I think that having those kind of deadlines really forces you to make decisions.
Deadlines are good.
Well, I believe it does, because you know sometimes you get a little too precious and
a
little bit too up your butt, if I can say that on the radio. But if you really do have that kind of you've got a timeline, you gotta move.
You gotta make those decisions.
And it's like when you're. It's the difference between recording with 30 tracks or 80 tracks.
Yeah.
It's limitless now in Pro Tools, right? But in the old days, when you only had 2 tracks or 4 tracks, you had to sort of make decisions on the fly.
That's what it was.
A certain amount of discipline, and it moves the process along, and I think in a positive way.
Vanessa's got her hand up.
Sorry. Braden Mitchell would like to know, are there event details on Facebook for the album release? And would you repeat the info again? On the album release.
Please.
Album release is Thursday night. Thank you, Braden, for the question.
Hi, Braden.
You're looking lovely this evening. Thursday evening, 23rd of November, at Say What Show. The music starts about 9. I think it's a $10 cover. Say What is at Church and on Front Street at Church on the south side.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Facebook page either under my or both under my name, Patrick Ballantyne, B as in boy, Allantyne, and Amber McLean, AmbreMcLean. Her album is called My Heart. My album is called Calendar. Can you think of anything else that might help the process?
That's good.
Starts at nine. Music should start
about 9.
Reservations?
You can buy tickets in advance through the Say What, I think it's connected to the Say What website.
Okay, cool.
Which I'm guessing is saywhat.com, but I don't know.
Yes. So
thank you for the question, though. That's great.
Yes. Thanks, Braden. We got to get Braden back on. He was great.
So,
one of the things we're going to do tonight is we're going to bring in our favorite guests, and they're going to pull apart two of their favorite songs. As opposed to presenting their own song, but we're just going to look at two of their favorite songs mm-hmm. and talk about why they're their favorite and what. And just as
we're going to do that from time to time.
Yes. Yes.
Tonight is Patrick.
Yes.
Yay.
Because he's one of our favorites.
Yes. So,
possibly your most favorite.
Most favorite.
Absolutely.
Possibly.
Yeah, it's.
Yes.
Okay, Phil.
So we have,
anyway.
We have two songs. Two songs. So the first song we're going to do is Help Me by Joni Mitchell.
Yes.
So let's talk about the song.
Well, I went to the ultimate source of information today, Wikipedia, just to get a little bit of background on sort of the logistics of it, because some of the stuff is a little blurry to me. But it was written, produced, and performed by Joni Mitchell of somewhere around Regina, Saskatchewan. I'm not 100% certain where she was born, but somewhere in that ballpark.
She's a prairie girl.
Prairie girl, for sure. Mm-hmm. The album was called Court and Spark. It was released, I think, in January of 1974. The song is kind of jazzy in its influence. I mean, she was originally started off as a folk singer.
Very jazzy.
And she had a couple of hit singles up to that point. I mean, when I first heard it, I was about 13.
Yeah.
I was very much into music at the time. I was a Beatles fanatic at the time. But I didn't have a lot of sensitive singer-songwriter, especially girl music, in my collection at the time. But I must have heard this song on the radio on CKLW back in the day, back in Windsor. And it hit me for some reason immediately. And it has stuck with me to this day. So I don't know whether you want to play it first.
I have the same thing. It's you know, Joni Mitchell, she was such a huge talent, and, you know, this I listened to AM radio constantly as a kid, and this was a huge hit. Many of Joni Mitchell's songs were hits, but this was, well, I think it peaked at number 7, which is, I think she's had a few number ones.
This was actually her highest charting song.
Did this chart higher than the Parking Lot song?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Now, the singles I would have known before her that I would have heard on the radio would have been, like you're saying, the Big Yellow Taxi
Paradise, Put Up a Parking Lot. Both Sides Now.
And Both Sides Now, I think, was a hit for somebody else. I think it was for Judy Collins.
Oh, that's right.
What was the other single that I knew of her? Oh, You Turn Me On, I'm a Radio, I think, did some business back then.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that.
But those were her two, I think, biggest singles up to that date. And then this one came on the radio.
That's the story. I think her record label said, make us a hit song for the radio, and she wrote, You Turn Me On, You're My Radio.
Oh, that could be.
Yeah,
that
she took it literally, right?
Right.
Because she was always going against convention. She was always experimenting with new things. Tunings, weird tunings, jazzy influences, and Courtney Sparks, she really went major into some jazz feel there, and then she stuck with that for quite a while.
She did. Mm-hmm.
Was she prolific throughout the 70s and 80s?
She's just prolific, period.
Prolific.
She's also a painter, a fantastic painter as well.
Okay.
And she does a lot of really interesting tunings, though.
Does she do her own album work?
She does her covers. Yeah.
She did that as well. Yeah, but what I found most difficult about Joni Mitchell, is other than her voice was so elastic, like it's very hard to replicate. I mean, it's very tough for any human, not just male or female, or male to sing it. It's hard for anybody to sing it. But it's also hard to replicate her guitar sound. And it wasn't until quite late that I realized that it was because she used open tunings and not like your basic open D or open G tunings, but she would use these bizarre tunings that seemingly she'd make up on the fly.
Well, I actually saw her talk about that. She says when she gets bored of writing songs, she'll just put her guitar into a weird tuning, and then you're kind of forced to sort of find different sounds.
Just for us newbies who don't play guitar, can you define, can you describe what an open tuning means? What does that mean?
The strings are set when you just strum them, when you don't touch them at all, to play a chord.
Okay.
Right?
So that's one way of doing it.
What's that?
There's more than one way.
Because right now, the way the guitar is tuned...
You can tune it open to D.
Demonstrate for us, Patrick.
Standard tuning would be like E, A, D, G, B, E, and I'm not fingering, I'm not fretting anything.
Right.
Yeah.
To make a chord, you have to sort of finger it a certain way.
Right.
But an open tuning... you would have to. Do I have a second?
Sure. Yeah.
So there's the old drop D, right?
So you start with a D.
Yeah.
Sort of do it. Yeah, D and A.
I used to tune the E down to a B, so it kind of droning.
So it's more or less like an open D chord sort of thing. It's not exactly, but I mean that's the difference. So I'm not touching any strings right now.
Yeah.
So. You hear it a lot in blues in particular.
Right. Okay.
But you can't do that with a piano.
No, you can. It just takes a little longer.
Yeah.
But it's just a
just
way
hit
of...
the right key.
You can actually just tune your guitar. It doesn't have to be an open tuning. It can just be random pitches just because it's going to
change all your chord shapes, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. But that's the whole point.
It really does. And I recommend it for any songwriter because, like somebody like me, who's not a real gifted guitar player. I mean, I know my G, my D, my A, my C. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I don't know what else you need, frankly, but I mean, those are, you've got those.
The A seventh. I'll teach you it later.
But when I pick up a guitar, I will oftentimes just play the same chords out of habit.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But when you move to an open tuning, it forces you to think differently and approach things differently, right? And I've written plenty of songs. It was actually Gordy, not Gordy Johnson of Big Sugar, who I've written with over the years. It was Gordy that really introduced me to open tuning because a lot of the Big Sugar stuff is done in open tuning.
Yeah,
and you can hear that's why the guitar sounds oftentimes sound so massive.
Yeah. Well, let's hear this. One interesting thing about this song, listen how she opens the song. Because it's really an interesting way of approaching this song.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually, when I think of this song, I never think of the intro. So let's hear it and take it from there.
Help me, I think I'm falling. I've seen some hard, hard places come down to smoke and ash. We love our loving. Not like we love our
And that was Help Me by Joni Mitchell on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. It's all the way back from 1974.
What a lady.
Yeah. What an amazing piece of work.
That was my prime. I was in my prime. I was at university then.
Were you?
Yeah, and the early 70s was the era of the singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
It was huge. One year, Harvest came out by Neil Young. Blue came out by Joni Mitchell. Tapestry by Carole King.
Yeah.
Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel did something, probably Sounds of Silence or something. It was just this explosion of the singer-songwriter. No longer were writers writing for bands or for artists, for singers. It was that whole thing, right, that happened. But what a terrific song. Thanks for bringing that in.
No,
it's an amazing
song.
When
I first heard that on the radio, I was 13. I had just turned 13 years old, so I didn't have a whole lot of experience with that, other than the Beatles, that kind of a romantic song. But this song to me sounded, and I'm looking at it through, with today's eyes, it must have sounded so sophisticated and so mature.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like a really cool person talking. Mm-hmm. It was so honest. I mean, there's certain of the lines, that have always struck me, she's making such obscure and clever references. You know, we love our loving, but not like we love our freedom.
That's really...
It's that push-pull between relationship and having freedom outside, like just do your own thing.
Yeah, which is, again, a very 70s notion, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, I think it still has very much some relevance today. It was just so restless, too. I mean, she wanted the relationship, but she was putting herself in that position as well. You know, it's not just him that's trouble, but I want to move on too. You know, we both. She's not saying you love your freedom. You know, it's both of us do.
But this line is very touching here. I think I'm falling in love with you. Are you going to let me go there by myself? That's such a lonely thing to do. In other words, you're not going to love me back? You're going to let me just fall for you?
Well, and it feels like both of us flirting. We got a tweet in from Sharon. Joni, completely unique and timeless. I could just keep listening forever. Thank you. Thanks for that tweet. Yeah, it's
Spotify.
Great. Interesting thing about the song. Let's look at the song in terms of the structure.
Yeah.
There's no chorus.
Nope.
So really the repeated is the help me, I think I'm falling in love again. Yeah.
Then there's that didn't it feel good section.
Which is sort of a bridge. And then they have, and at the end is help me, I think I'm falling in love with you. A nice little sort of change. And another thing, which is, that intro always throws me off when I hear
it. Why does that intro throw you off?
Because it doesn't sound like the rest of the song. It always sounded very different.
Oh, the da 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 da.
No.
It's just the strumming.
The strumming, yeah.
The
rhythm is sort of totally different.
Maybe that's her transition from folk music into jazz.
Well, it could be.
I think she's an emotional writer. I think she writes an emotional arc rather than a brain.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Another thing to look at the song is the use of hooks. Which was very common at the time, which people don't do a lot now. Mm. They have those little sort of hooks in between phrases, in between verses.
Mm.
You know, the parts that I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting.
Well, those are instrumental hooks as opposed to lyric hooks.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think probably what grabbed me as a kid was, and I think I had been sensitized, I don't know what I was listening to. My hunch was that the first song of this sort that was filled with longing and yearning for somebody, oddly enough, was like a song by Paul McCartney on the Ram album called Backseat in My Car. And I was like a big Beatles fan. Mm. And when they broke up, I became, a solo Beatle fan. And that particular album I really loved. But there's a song called Backseat in My Car, which is just, I know we shouldn't be back here. I know we should be home with you, but I just want to hold you a little bit longer. And it really resonated with me, that kind of longing. And this sort of mines, I think, that same vein. Mm-hmm. As in a lot of the music I began to really love back then, Big Star in particular, like Alex Shilton and Chris Bell would write songs in that sort of vein where they're so restless and they just want something so badly, but they can't quite
like
get it.
Like puberty.
It probably is.
Yeah. There's
13 years old. Right?
Well, there's a gold mine in puberty, right? Look at what happened with people like Justin Bieber tapped into the 12-year-old and 13-year-old girls.
Yeah.
Right? It's like that time of who am I? What am I doing? Suddenly I have this feeling for the opposite sex or the same sex. Suddenly I'm confused. I don't know who my parents are, but this guy, I get him. Like, he gets me, and I,
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's probably at that age what you're tapping into.
Well, you're probably right. And like I said earlier, though, when you hear this, I don't think McCartney ever was quite as sophisticated lyrically.
Very few people
as
are.
This. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not a slam on McCartney because God knows he was pretty damn good.
He did all right.
Well, and Neil, what do you think?
Well, it's certainly a different approach to melody. I mean, the thing that strikes me about this song is how, I mean, I think earlier, Patrick, you described her melodic thing as being elastic.
Yeah.
I was thinking like fluid.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like it's just water flowing in between rocks. Just wherever it's going to go, it's going to go. And it's almost like she doesn't have necessarily even control of it.
Yeah,
you know, it's just tossing it off. It's just tossing it off. There are lines that don't adhere to the same pattern as before. Things are changing constantly.
It's like her voice is a jazz instrument.
Yeah.
Because it's just about...
Yeah. Improvised, but at the same time, it's not.
No, I'm sure.
It's one of those rare treats and where the song itself is fabulous and the recording of the song is every bit as good. It totally does it does it justice.
And she produces her own song?
She may have been a co-producer on this, but and I apologize, I should know the producer's name, but I don't off the top of my head.
I'm curious who put her sound together. Maybe she had a series of producers.
I think there was one guy that worked with her at the time. I want to say Harold Levy, but I could be wrong. It's swung. I mean, she brought in a guy whose music I'm not usually a big fan of is Tom Scott, that sort of L.A. jazz light type stuff. But in this context, I think it really, really worked well. And you hear the horns. And you hear Larry Carlton's guitar playing on this is like one of my favorite parts of the song.
I really like the background vocals, too.
Yeah, the background, Well, the real jazz influence there, too.
Yeah.
And this, the way the drums swing on this track, too, is just a
real... What was the album this was on? Because Blue,
Court and Spark.
Court and Spark. Because Blue was earlier, right?
Yes.
And that's the really famous...
This was huge, though, too. And this was when she was moving in the jazz direction. Didn't she tour with a jazz band?
She did.
With Scott?
She did. With Tom Scott, and there was, I think, a live album that came out after this album.
Yeah.
May have been after the next one, which is called Hissing of Summer Lawns. But for those writers who aren't really all that familiar with Joni Mitchell, this is probably the best place to start because it's pretty easy to wrap your head around this stuff. It's lovely. It's well produced. And it's not really overly difficult.
Yeah.
But as she went further on, like the next album was Hissing of Summer Lawns, and one after that was Hijira, which is my personal favorite. They got each increasingly a little bit
more obtuse,
a little more challenging, right?
Okay.
You know, either more jazzy or just more. Just more challenging, right? She really was not one to sit in one place too long. And I think as a result, I've really admired artists who have done that. Sometimes they lose me, but I have total respect for the fact that they need to challenge themselves.
Yeah. You know? It's an interesting, when you look at the lyrics, it's interesting that she's able to write, like she writes really honestly and really sort of very, very personally, but never to the point where it kind of excludes the listener.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I've noticed songwriters
do. It's not
overly
specific.
Yeah, because some people, they write something and they write it for their kids or something, but it's so clearly that it's for their kids. It's almost a bit embarrassing to listen to because it's just not open. Mm-hmm. She's able to write something that's very, very personal to her, but somehow it's open at the same time.
And at the same time, that can always be a starting point. Like Stevie Wonder, Isn't She Lovely, or about his baby daughter, but it doesn't read as such. Right?
Do you know what's really interesting about her writing? If you think about a song, it goes, the last time I saw Richard, it was Detroit in 68, and then she starts quoting him. I love those story songs. And then he said, all romantics meet the same fate, you know, ending somewhere. So it's kind of like she's just rapping. She's just talking, not rapping.
Yeah.
That confuses the issue. Yeah. But she's having a conversation. She's telling us a story in a very natural way, and then it's on this beautiful melody with this voice just going everywhere.
Yeah, because when you look at the,
which are on the website, by the way.
Yes.
Yes, if you want to follow them on the website.
Songtalk.ca, get all the lyrics.
Yeah.
If you look at the way she structures the words on her verses, I mean, they're not really tightly structured. I mean, it's not like, it's like da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, they're all sort of...
They're all different.
Yeah, they're all different, you know.
She revisits certain hooks, which kind of gives it its grounding, but otherwise... It's up in the clouds.
Take it away, Neil.
All right. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. We're on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and streamed live on songtalk.ca. And tonight is our guest, Patrick Ballantyne. We're dissecting two of his favorite songs. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so please tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show on our resources page at songtalk.ca. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have November 28th next week, talking about songs with unusual singers.
Yes.
Oh, so unusual voices.
Unusual voices.
Be like Tom Waits or...
Bruce Herrett.
And on December 5th, we have the return of young teenage sensation Jules.
Oh, yeah, she's wonderful. There.
And that is actually our 200th show.
All right.
We'll get a cake.
We'll get a cake. And on December 12th, we have singer-songwriter and poet Robert Priest joining us.
That'll be really good.
That'll be interesting. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup. It's on Sunday, November 26th, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transat Club. That's in the Annex area of Toronto. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by our website, songtalk.ca, for the link.
You'll be there?
I will be there, actually.
Okay, that's great.
Yes.
That's good.
Can I just say one more thing, Phil, before we move on to the next song? These are the little details I love about Joni Mitchell. So the second verse, she says, "Help me, I think I'm falling in love again," right, is the first verse. And then she says, "Help me, I think I'm falling in love too fast." But on too fast, she slows it down. She goes, "Help me, I think I'm falling in love too fast." Come on. You know, like, that's subtle. Conscious, right?
Yeah.
It's either really cool to slow down on too fast, or she's just, well, she is brilliant. You
know? Then it goes on to say, "You got me hoping for the future.
And worrying about,
and worrying about the past." I mean, what a freaking great couple of that is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like,
it's so true.
My gosh.
It's so true.
And that's one of the things that just struck me about this
Isn't
song.
Isn't that true, though, Patrick, that the songs where there's ambiguity or conflict, where you're feeling two different things at the same time, that you're being pushed and pulled back and forth, in other words, a song with real conflict, either an emotional conflict or some conflict, they're so... That's what caught you at 13, I think, was this ambiguity.
Yeah, there's different ways of reflecting that conflict, too. You were talking about songs with odd singers.
Yeah.
when I was prepping for this show and I was trying to figure out what songs to present, one of the songs that I was going to present is a song called, I think it's called Somewhere, which is from West Side Story.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, the...
There's a place for us, somewhere a place.
And I loved, absolutely loved that song, right? And so I'm looking for a definitive version to, right. to yeah. present to you. And there was the original Broadway, and it's like, that's a little too Broadway, right? Yeah. And then there's a wonderful version by, or I thought would be a wonderful version by Barbara Streisand. You know, who sings better than her? And it's so 80s. It's just like the worst 80s production you've ever heard.
The Canadian guy produced that for...
David Foster?
David Foster.
Oh, well, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It was David Foster.
David Foster, but that was a mistake.
Yeah.
And then I said, oh, and there's Tom Waits, speaking of odd singers. Oh, there's a Tom Waits version of this.
No, I can see him doing a beautiful
version. And it becomes... This is what you're saying. It's mixed messages in that. It's such a desperate yearning. Again, there's that yearning song.
Yeah. But, somewhere, somehow.
But somebody who's been beaten down to the point where he sounds like that, right? It's just a wonderful, wonderful juxtaposition.
Well, and the thing about Tom Waits is, like, he can actually sing songs about longing in a certain kind of way that no one else can. You know, it's so
sing
raw.
Just about anything in a way no one else.
Well,
can.
It's very true. But I tell you, it grabs you by that. When he sings stuff, it can grab you by the heart.
Oh yeah.
Or you know, if you can get past the initial shock, because that voice is
can be challenging.
It's tough slogging.
Sure. He's one of my heroes, though.
I can see why. You know, everything I've heard from him is I have this sort of the same. Well, Randy Newman's kind of it's not as difficult to listen to, but it's not it's a bit of an acquired taste.
Yes.
But once you get past it, it's like you realize, oh my gosh, what he can do with that voice is actually, you know, we won't even get near Dylan. But anyway, that's a future show.
That's going to be a future show.
Another discussion.
Yeah. So one thing we're going to do, actually, is to celebrate the release of Calendar, is we're going to give away one of your CDs.
Yes.
For the first send us a message, but it can't be Mike. So Mike, if you're out there,
previous winners can't apply.
well, Mike can't. He knows what. But send us an email to feedback@songtalk.ca with the word subject line calendar, and we will send you out a copy of a hard copy.
It's not spelled with a K on your album, is it?
No, but I wish I would have thought of that.
Patrick.
I like that.
Oh yeah.
So, for those who are late joining, Calendar is the name of my new record.
Why did you call it Calendar?
Because it was one song a month.
Right.
One song a month. It was actually Matt Connell.
I can see the video now with the pages flowing past.
I should do a video.
Each new song. Another scene.
Yeah, well,
did you match the seasons to the songs at all, or was it irrelevant? You didn't write a winter song in the winter, did you?
No, not at all. In fact, there's a song called 25 Feet of Snow, which I think was September or Miss August.
Well, I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas was written in August.
Was it really?
In
Los
California,
Angeles. Wasn't it?
Yeah, Los Angeles.
Well, that's why he was actually only dreaming of it.
He was dreaming, exactly.
So the next song we're going to be doing is a really interesting song.
All right, this is a song. Where are my notes here?
Sylvia.
Originally recorded by and written by the Canadian folk duo. Is that what we call them? A folk
duo?
That's hard for me to say.
But they were a married couple, too.
They were married, although there's lots of stuff on the internet about that particular relationship. It was on a 1966 album called.
60s.
called Play One More. And again, I'm not 100% sure who wrote it. I don't know whether it's an Ian Tyson song or whether it's a combo. I have a hunch he was involved in it because it is a very male-centric lyric.
But maybe they were like McCartney and Lennon, they shared credit.
It could be. I mean, God knows. She wrote some absolutely gorgeous. Like, she wrote, you know, You Are On My Mind. So she was certainly capable of writing a catchy song, not that this one is particularly catchy.
This is an interesting one.
There you go. Now, according to what I've been able to find on the net, this was actually a very popular song when it was released in terms of other folk singers picking it up and recording it. The version that I first heard was well past 1966. It was by a singer named Gene Clark. And for those who may know, don't know, Gene was one of the founding members of a band called The Byrds, Mr. Tambourine Man, Turn, 8 Miles High. Gene was a wonderful, wonderful songwriter, one of my favorites. When he went solo after he left The Byrds in about 1966, 67, this was supposed to be his first single, and The French Girl was the B-side of another song. But for whatever reason, was never released, and if it was released, it didn't last long. So I didn't hear about this song. I didn't even hear it until after he died, which was, I think, around about 1991 when all the reissues started coming out. Now, the original Edith and Sylvia song is tough slogging. It's slow.
It's an odd song.
It
doesn't sound like them at all,
actually. It's almost unnecessarily slow. I don't quite get what they were getting at. It's heavy on the cellos, heavy on the strings, really yawning, mellow.
And it's a demo, right? It's like that's what's on... Well, the one I heard on YouTube was the demo.
Well, so. I'm not sure. You might be right about that. But this was released on one of their albums. The song lyrically seems to be about a one-night stand, about... an Anglophone with a French girl, which is the name of the song. But when you read the lyrics, there's a reference to, you know, you may find above the border. So you realize that it's probably Quebec French girl, not a France French girl. Anyway, why don't we listen to the song, and then we can chat a bit more about it from there.
So things to listen for. Listen to the way, again, an interesting structure. Listen to the verses, because the verses do stuff that you don't expect it to do. And then pay attention to how they go into the chorus, because I think that's going to be something interesting to talk about.
Yeah, one little thing. There's an odd, and it took me a while to figure this out, but there's an extra couple of beats in the verse. And those extra couple of beats can make this song a bit challenging to sing along to and play. Anyway, there you go. Yeah.
Okay, let's take a listen.
Three silver rings on slim hands waiting, flash bright in candlelight through Sunday's early morn.
And that was The French Girl by Jean Clark, written by Ian and Sylvia Tyson, or Ian Tyson and Sylvia Fricker, which is the official songwriting.
What was going on with the rhythm in the verse part?
It is a weird, yes, let's talk about
it. So unusual.
It makes that, and between that and the cadence of the lyric and the melody, it is a
mashup.
It is an odd, odd song, and I don't know why it resonates with me.
When you suggested it, I found something on YouTube, and it was the original one demo with Ian and Sylvia Tyson, and it's quite odd. And I sort of thought, okay. And this is actually more of a conventional reading of the song.
Yeah. In a 60s kind of way.
Yes, and it's very much of its time, which is fine. I mean, everything needs to be.
I heard
of
a little
time.
Touch of the birds there in the refrain.
Yes,
with the tambourine and the
piano. So between the original Ian and Sylvia version and this version, is the verse kind of similar?
The songs are almost exactly presented. I mean, the structure is almost exactly the same.
And the melodies are the same.
The melody is the same. Ian and Sylvia sing it as a duet, not surprisingly.
Okay.
Gene Clark's version, the one we just played, omits a verse, a short verse.
Okay.
What's the time signature?
It's just 4/4. It's
4/4, but there are a couple 2/4 bars.
So yeah, there's 2/4.
Three silver rings on the slim hands waiting before.
There's like an extra couple of beats in there that shouldn't be there.
Which is very, which would be hard to do actually, just from a band standpoint.
My hunch is that he just did it. It just came out that way when he wrote it. And I've done that. I mean, it's like a lot of times I'll try to teach a song I've written to somebody, and they'll go, "That doesn't, meter-wise, doesn't make sense." But sometimes it just happens that way. And it's not necessarily wrong. And in this case, I think it does make the song that much more interesting.
But in this case, we're actually, I mean, obviously it draws attention to itself. Usually when it works naturally, I find it doesn't draw attention to itself.
To me, it was interesting. I don't know if it draws attention to itself.
Well, like the song I wrote, we played this on our pre-chorus show, and I wrote Light Your Way for Bass Shelter. Mm-hmm. There's a 2/4 bar in that chorus. We didn't know it at the time, but when I actually sequenced it in the recording, I was like, wait a minute, there's a 2/4 bar in here in a 4/4 song. I didn't realize, but it just felt natural.
Yeah, it just felt right.
But here it does feel kind of odd.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting, because at first I didn't like the song. The more I've heard it, actually, it's actually really kind of grown on me, because it's such an interesting, odd little tune. Like, it's not...
But, we could spend a lot of time talking about the odd structure of it, to my mind, in some respects, it is the quintessential Canadian song. When he talks about... It's two languages, right? Two people that don't really understand each other very well, that are in two very different worlds coming together. And we know now that it's English Canada and French Canada. And we've all, I suspect, been there where...
Yeah.
I think in my notes I said it's like, you're welcome to visit, but you're not welcome to join that club.
Right? Yeah,
it's a very different world. My friends down at the French cafe, her friends down at the French cafe, had no English words for me. Well, that is the quintessential, to my mind, Canadian lyric.
Well, no, the thing is, like in Quebec at that time, probably they didn't know English. It wasn't like they were holding back the French Canadians. They may have, but they may have just said, "Well, I don't want to talk to you." But it is a bit of a conflict there, because when they say my French friends had no English words for you, it means they're not even trying to bridge the thing, right?
And that was how I took it, and I think your other interpretation is probably just as valid, but I'm seeing it through more political eyes.
There was the
old two solitudes notion, right? I mean, this really, to my mind, is a reflection of the two solitudes.
That was pretty intense at the time,
It certainly was, and I don't know that Ian Tyson or Sylvia Tyson had that in mind.
No.
But it certainly is reflected, I think.
Get him on the phone.
I'd love to. You know what?
This should be on our show.
Okay.
You know what? You should. It would be wonderful, because he's still around, and he's still kicking, and he's still... And so is Sylvia, right? And she's local, right?
And that's the reason why we did the show, because if people get squished by a bus, all that knowledge goes away.
Right.
You know, we're not capturing the songwriting abilities and all these little things.
Yes. In perpetuity.
Well, there you go.
As long as there are computers.
And of course, another interesting thing is how they went into the chorus, where there's not a jump. it's really in the same key. It's the same chord.
Yeah,
it starts off. And they managed to make it into a chorus because of its the way they handle the instrumentation and a bit of the melody. But it's not.
Yeah, the beat doubles up a little bit.
The B section, the chord doesn't change.
Not really. I mean, the chorus is such as it is just, you know, she left each time I asked her name, make promises to meet again. So it's not really all that different than the
what key is it in?
A. Key of E.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's it's a story song too.
Mm-hmm. Very much. You know, it's a very short story.
Because there's another one about. About like leaving a girl in Mexico or something, mm-hmm. a famous song, El Paso or something.
Yeah.
That's what this reminded me of. Those streets of El Paso, and it was a voice like that.
It's true.
There were all these stories about, and then she ran away, you know, and that had the same, except they put in some Tijuana horn section, right? Yeah. But it had that same band sound with the tambo and the chorus. Did you hear how heavy the chorus is? What the background vocals were through this whole song?
Yeah.
What's interesting is that the version I first heard did
not have the background vocals. It was
This was
the single version.
Yeah.
And then the one that was released after that removed the background vocals, which to my ears are kind of distracting.
Yes.
And mixed up a little bit too loud and not necessarily in tune and all
it's
that.
It's like when Simon and Garfunkel came out and they went to a record company. They added strings to everything. Like, you knew this was a beautiful folk song with guitar, bass, and drums.
Yeah.
And then they put these huge... This was a thing in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
The record company says, we've got to beef up the backgrounds. We'll put... And all they knew was string sections and background singers.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, all production is of its time.
Yeah.
This was very much of a time, you know?
I remember the name of the famous Canadian, Guy Clark.
He's not Canadian, is he?
No. But there is a Guy Clark, right?
There is a Guy
Clark. Clark, yeah.
I think he's Texan, but I could be wrong.
And he's a writer,
too. He's a writer.
Yes.
Okay.
He's a writer, and he's a songwriter.
Okay.
And all of that.
I wasn't crazy.
I don't know if I can actually portray this. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I love about this song, and it's especially in the Ian and Sylvia version, which, in fairness, we didn't play. But remember, I was talking about there's a place.
Yeah.
There's that, and it's that A7, right?
Yeah.
Plays, and it goes to so the root is actually a 7 as well. And it's like, it doesn't let you quite get where you want to go.
That's
it's
right,
not
happy.
It's like, it's pulling you back, holding you back a little bit. and on this song as well, he does the same thing, where it never quite goes to a major. The root is always a 7. It's always holding you back from what you really want. You know, that's... I hear that, and I find I do that when I'm writing as well. I use the 7 as a
root chord.
As a 1.
It's almost like a suggestion that, sorry, son, you're not getting... You can't have that.
Home.
You
no
can't
resolution.
Have that yet, right? There's no... it's a resolution.
We did a little Google here. So yeah. Guy Clark... Why I'm remembering is because it was Blair Packham who brought in Desperados Waiting for the Train by Guy Clark, who's from Texas.
Okay, from Texas.
He's a Texan. But Blair came in to share two of his favorite songs, just much like you're doing.
Yes.
We bring in the famous singer-songwriters of the city. And he brought in this Desperados Waiting for a Train, which was really...
That's a killer song.
Yeah,
is a killer song. I remember hearing that show, and Blair is quite a fan of that song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One interesting thing I noticed about the song, the title doesn't show up in the lyric.
No, it doesn't.
But it's interesting because without the title, you wouldn't know what it was about necessarily, because the lyric is really she and her and her friends.
Yeah.
And the only reference to French is really the French cafe had no English words for me. But otherwise, it could be, you know, it could be the foreign girl, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but as soon as the title, the title is what suggests the English French.
Yeah, that's a good point. Right? I mean, it's maybe because of the format of radio at the time, you know, because they would always.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's with some as we talk about this, how the title should be in the lyric.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I think that this is an instance where the title is not in the lyric, but the reason for the title is apparent.
Well, yeah. I don't know. My 56 years of life, it feels like this is the perfect name for this song because it is very much about. And the only better title would have been The Girl from Quebec City.
Yeah,
or the girl in the French cafe.
Exactly what it feels like.
The girl in the French cafe.
Yeah,
I feel like I know this person. And I feel like I know both of these people.
Yeah, that's true. Song, yes.
And I can imagine when Ian and Sylvia were, when Ian brought this song to Sylvia, whatever he said, Sylvia, this was long before we met.
It was a long time ago.
I was young.
I don't know if I can say this on the show, but when I first talked to her, when I mentioned, I met her at a reception, and I said, I just love that. And it occurred to me afterwards, maybe that wasn't the best song to reference because that clearly is talking about
another woman, another person,
yeah, right?
But that's what you say. You always say that was long before Blair talked about that.
Were Shirley Sylvia's numbers?
Well, it's entirely possible.
Sylvia Fricker doesn't sound too Quebecois.
Oh, no, I think they're both.
You know what? She's a girl from my neck of the woods. She's from Chatham, Ontario.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Is Ian from Calgary, though?
I think he was born in Victoria, but I think he lives out somewhere in Alberta now.
They had the cowboy thing going for quite a while.
Right? I saw him performing at the Canadian Country Music Awards. He was part of the I almost called it Oldie Show, but it's not Oldie Show. It's like the Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah. And God bless him. He got up there. He's 80 some odd years old now, and he got up. He did a couple songs, and he was great. He was strong. He did it. He did his thing.
And then, and these guys, Ian and Sylvia, are the Birds.
No.
The Birds.
Gene Clark was in the Birds.
That's the other song.
And the other person. And Eric Clapton was in the Birds as well, right?
No, Roger McGuinn was in the Birds.
Roger McGuinn.
You're thinking of the Yardbirds.
The Yardbirds were an English band
that had not only Eric Clapton, but Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page.
That's right.
At one point.
Super group, just like Cream.
It was a super group.
Well, not all at once, I think.
But Jimmy Page was, that was before Zeppelin.
Jimmy Page was in the band just before they broke up, and then he, if you listen to very late Yardbirds, it sounds very much like early Led Zeppelin.
Oh, really? Wow. All right. The one thing, the guitarist from my band and I had in common is we both disliked Led Zeppelin.
You disliked them?
Yeah.
How could you dislike Led Zeppelin?
And, well, no, I love stuff like that, some of their songs are like, but like, I never liked the blues things they did. Mm. And that was the thing that, that really united the guitarist and me is that we both just, you know, because when you grow up as a teenage kid, you know, everyone loves Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And I was always like,
oh, I didn't. No. Well, the thing is, all the British bands were doing blues. They discovered American blues.
They loved blues.
All doing blues. The Stones were doing it. Mm-hmm. They all started out with that, right? Because it was dark and it was American. It was foreign. Mm. It was different. And we've kind of wandered off the French Grill, but that's okay.
Yeah,
it's
well,
okay. We're talking about music.
It's all good fun.
Do you want to plug your album again?
Yes.
Please do.
So what's the calendar? Let's talk about calendar and release.
How many tracks is it?
12 songs. Tracks. Just like
full album.
For the name
You're
of
not
the...
getting the
oh,
concept.
Of one yes. per month.
One yes. per month.
I knew that.
It's a project.
Why did you call it calendar?
Jeez.
So, calendar, yes.
So if you did it during a leap year, would you have to throw in an extra
Well,
verse?
You know what? I would be happy to do that. You know what? If that's what people want. My third album, Calendar, released in October, out, available now on northwoodrecords.com, I think. Certainly through iTunes and all the other digital sites, and CD release with Amber McLean on Thursday night at Say What Church and Front Street in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
It's at 9 o'clock
start,
9 o'clock?
More or less, yeah.
That's good, so it's not too late.
No, we should be done by 11 o'clock, and y'all can get home to your families.
That's really important.
You should come back and play some tunes from your new album in the new year.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe February, March, something like that.
And don't forget, send us an email to feedback@songtalk.ca. That's feedback@songtalk.ca with the subject called calendar. And we will send to you, absolutely free, Calendar by Patrick Ballantyne.
It'll be signed by Patrick.
It's signed by Patrick Ballantyne,
and
yes.
Clark and Ian and Sylvia Tyson.
Sure. Why not?
Everybody.
And Joni Mitchell, too.
That's true.
No, may not be true. Thank you, Patrick. This has been fantastic. Thanks so much for coming
out.
You guys are great. Always good. because that is all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. And, of course, we'd like to thank our guest, Mr. Patrick Ballantyne. And, Pat, how do they get more of your stuff? It's Patrick Ballantyne.
www.patrickballantyne.com. B-A-L-L-A-N-T-Y-N-E.
Thanks very much. Send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site at songtalk.ca, and also subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca, which will eventually come out
someday.
You can find links to all the products and books and web services we mention each time here on Song Talk Radio on the resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. If you are in the Toronto area, please join us at the next Songwriters Meetup on Sunday, November 26th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transact Club. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the juicy details.
Neil's going to be there.
And Neil's going to be there.
I will be there.
Yes.
And Eric will be there as
well. And Eric will be there, and the whole gang will be there.
Also,
it'll be fun.
Neil's birthday this week.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
birthday.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Very exciting. So make sure you get your cards out.
It's
in
a national
time.
Holiday.
And it should be. Well, we'd like to thank CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto for putting up with all our shenanigans. We would like to thank Vanessa Vreeland for taking care of all the social media channels. And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home listener. If you were on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
NeilModi_.com.
You can follow Bruce at
Bruce Harrett.
You can follow Vanessa at
Sonny_Vanessa.
Of course.
Thanks,
you can
Vanessa.
Follow me at
You're welcome.
The Phil Emery. And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca.
What about Patrick?
And Patrick.
Twitter. What do I need to know?
Your Twitter.
Patrick, Twitter.
Oh,
it's on the website.
Patrick Ballantyne. I don't know. I have one.
And thank
we'll
you to Anthony.
You. And thank Anthony for being on the board.
More
than
just
please stop by the website at songtalk.ca. Browse past shows. Find out how you can be a guest on our show.
PJR
Ballantyne.
PJR Ballantyne.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Good night, everyone.
I would make a mess if it wasn't for Vanessa.